Hi there, I'm BJ Lindsay and my pronouns are she, they. I'd like to welcome all of you who are here in our beautiful church building, as well as those of you who have joined us online, and those of you who will watch the recording later. It's great to have you in our community. And I know that there are some new faces here today that I haven't seen here before, so I'm really grateful that you showed up today. And there are also folks here that I haven't seen in a while, so I feel really grateful for that as well. So I'm here to talk today about a topic that I'm calling Wisdom of the Ages, Lessons We Can Learn from Each Generation. I'm going to start with a little bit of a backstory. So the first time I spoke at one of our summer services was in 2018, and that happened to be on my 51st birthday. And my topic for that speech was Reflections on Aging. I thought it was timely. There was something about being in my 50s that seemed very significant, and I was having some big feelings about it. For me, turning 51 meant I really was in my 50s, because on my 50th birthday, I could just kind of shrug off all that heavy emotional stuff with the excuse, hey, I just turned 50 today. I don't really know what it's all about. I'm a rookie at this 50-something gig. But as I approached that day in August 2018, when I would speak at a summer service here for the first time, I was marking one whole year of life in my 50s. And I had some things to say about that. But even then, as someone with a whopping 1 year of experience as a 50-something, I knew I did not know a whole lot about aging. Although I will say, I think part of wisdom is knowing what you do not know. So I'm going to give myself credit for that. But as someone with a history degree from Bradley University, right down the road, I figured I'd better do some research. So I turned to people with much more expertise on the aging subject than myself. I interviewed several of this congregation's oldest members. One of the experts I consulted was our very own Henry Rakoff. Henry was just shy of, get this, 94 years old at the time. And as most of you know, our dear Henry passed away in 2025 at the amazing, incredible age of 100. After many, many years of service to us, this community here, and to the larger world and his family. Henry was the only centenarian I have ever known personally, and I'm really honored that he shared some of his wisdom with me. So Henry, I'm dedicating today's reflections to you. So there is a reason that I chose this Sunday to present this topic. This week, I will turn 59 and begin the last year of my 50s. So, this will be my final year as a quinquagenarian. Yes, a person in their 50s is called a quinquagenarian. And it only took me almost 9 years of being a quinquagenarian, to learn that term, quinquagenarian. I mean, it took me like 9 hours to learn how to say it. I still haven't quite nailed it. But now that I'm only a year away from turning 60, I feel like I'm a bit more qualified to talk about aging from a personal perspective. And I've also become more interested in the academic and professional perspectives on aging. So this year I began graduate school in pursuit of a Master of Science in Aging Studies through online courses at Eastern Illinois University. And that is aging, A-G-I-N-G. Not Asian, A-S-I-A-N, as much as I love Asian food and Asian cultures. It's aging, aging studies at EIU. So I bring you these reflections from those perspectives, personal, academic, professional. In 1986, a book that you might have heard of was released. It's called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And it's a collection of essays by Robert Fulghum. And it includes bits of wisdom, such as play fair, say you're sorry when you hurt somebody, and a very, very important rule for life, flush. Just saying. Think of the world. If nobody flushed ever, it'd be chaos and unpleasantness. Fun fact, though, Robert Fulghum, the author of that book, is a retired UU minister. Now, it's been 40 years since that book was released. And full disclosure, I have not read the whole book, just snippets, so I don't really feel qualified to comment further on its contents. But I can tell you this. All I really need to know about aging, or more accurately, all I thought I needed to know about aging, I learned from movies, especially movies from the 1980s and 90s. In 1981, I saw the film On Golden Pond. The film is based on a play and focuses on a married couple, Norman and Ethel Thayer, facing their own aging and mortality as Norman observes his 80th birthday. They navigate these issues while hosting Billy, the 13-year-old son of their daughter Chelsea's boyfriend. Initially, Billy is disgruntled about having to stay with this older couple, but ultimately he grows to appreciate and care about them a lot. And Chelsea and Norman become closer after decades of tension in their daughter-father relationship. Henry Fonda and Katharine Hepburn won Best Acting Oscars for their roles as Norman and Ethel. Chelsea was played by Jane Fonda, who was Oscar nominated for Best Supporting Actress. Now, for a couple years, I was totally obsessed with On Golden Pond. And I watched it countless times on my family's HBO. I'm really not sure why it struck a chord with me, because I was only 14 when I first saw it. Maybe it was because I related to the Billy character as a young teenager. But I watched it so much, I memorized most of the lines. And one of the scenes that I still recall clearly, one that really came to mind when I started working on what I would say today, is this scene in which Ethel tells Norman about a couple she met while she was out walking. And she says, "They're a nice middle-aged couple, just like us." Norman says, "If they're just like us, they're not middle-aged." Norman goes on to explain, "Middle age means the middle, Ethel, the middle of life. People don't live to be 150. Ethel responds with, "Well, we're at the far age of middle age, that's all." Great lines, right? It's by the screenwriter Ernest Thompson, who also wrote the play. Another movie that grabbed me was Fried Green Tomatoes, the 1991 film based on a novel by Fanny Flagg, who also was one of the screenwriters for the film. In that movie, Kathy Bates plays Evelyn Couch, a woman in her 40s, who is awkwardly adjusting to middle age. Yes, real middle age this time. Not like 70 or 80-year-old middle age. Evelyn befriends an elderly woman named Ninni Threadgood, played by Jessica Tandy in an Oscar-nominated performance. Listening to Ninni's stories about strong women from her younger years, Evelyn is inspired to become more confident and assertive and to start doing things her way in life. In a very memorable scene, Evelyn is waiting for a parking space at a supermarket when a pair of young women zip into it in their VW Beetle. Evelyn tells them she was waiting for that spot, and one of them says, "Face it, lady, we're younger and faster." And Evelyn, she loses it a little bit. She's had enough. So after the young women walk into the store, Evelyn rams her car into the rear of their VW bug, not once, but several times, backing up, ramming it again and again. And you can just see the glee build on her face. And when the young women come out and scream at Evelyn to stop, she says, "Face it, girls, I'm older and I have more insurance," before she triumphantly drives off. Now, just to be clear, I'm not advocating or endorsing property damage, but these are two movies that have stuck with me all these years, and both of them capture intergenerational dynamics in memorable ways. Decades have passed, but intergenerational dynamics still present challenges. Sometimes those intergenerational differences lead to conflicts and resentments. And before I go any further into my examination of some challenges facing intergenerational relationships, I want to define the terms I will use for the generations of humans on this planet. As I talk about generations, I'm not describing kinship relationships like, you know, my father, my father's father, my father's father's father. Not those generations. Instead, I'm talking about social generations. A social generation is the collective group of the people born and living in about the same date range who share similar cultural experiences. The average time span for each generation is about 20 to 30 years. And there are numerous variations in how the generations are classified in terms of time spans and names. I did research this because that's kind of my jam. The classifications also are not the same from one part of the world to another. But for the purposes of this speech, after extensive research, I decided to use generation classifications commonly used in the United States as presented in one of today's most frequently consulted reference sources, Wikipedia. I'll start with the Lost Generation, which was born from 1883 to 1900. The Lost Generation came of age during World War I and the Roaring Twenties. Then there's the Greatest Generation, sometimes called the GI Generation. This is the generation Tom Brokaw wrote about in a pretty well-known, well-selling book. This generation spans the years 1901 to 1927, as far as birth years, and it includes most World War II veterans. After the Greatest Generation came the Silent Generation. Born from 1928 to 1945, most Korean War veterans and some Vietnam War veterans came from this generation. And I can tell you, as someone whose parents were both born during that generation and whose parents-in-law were both born during that generation, they weren't necessarily silent. It's just a name. Then came the baby boomers, often shortened to boomers. This generation was born from 1946 to 1964, and its name is from the term baby boom, referring to the increased birth rates after World War II. Baby boomers are a relatively large age demographic group. Older boomers may have fought in the Vietnam War or participated in the counterculture or hippie movement of the 1960s, or possibly both. Next is Generation X, what many of us call Gen X, and that is my generation. We Gen Xers were born between 1965 and 1980, and sometimes Gen X is called the baby bust generation because of the drop in birth rates after the baby boom. And sometimes we're called the MTV generation because of the popularity of that channel among us during our youth, and probably the endless hours of MTV that we watched while we were in our younger years. After Generation X came Millennials, also called Generation Y, born from 1981 to 1996, around the beginning of the current millennium, hence the name. Generation Z, also called Gen Z, came along from 1997 to 2012. And finally, we have Generation Alpha, the children born since 2012. Right now in the United States, the most populous generation is Millennials, followed by Generation Z, then Generation X, then Baby Boomers, then Generation Alpha, and finally, the Silent Generation. But really, why do these generational classifications matter? It could be argued that these groupings are really arbitrary. After all, although each generation has shared some common cultural experiences, every individual member of any given generation is just that, an individual. And I don't believe in stereotyping people. Although sometimes we might find stereotypes funny because they happen to reflect our own experiences and observations, they also can lead to inaccurate and sometimes harmful assumptions about people. And these dangers include stereotypes based on generations or age groups. But the reality is, people in our present day culture often do make assumptions and judgments based on generational stereotypes. And also, there are ongoing intergenerational tensions that contribute to resentments and sometimes overt hostilities. Some of those tensions may be based on judgments that are based on stereotypes that are rooted in facts, and some of those tensions may be based on stereotypes that are not based in facts, but rather in the application of one's own generational values to the way of life of another generation. Now, I think it's fairly well known that many people in the generations younger than the baby boomers resent the boomers, and to some extent the silent generation, for what they, the younger generations, view as hoarding wealth and power. Now, I know there are many boomers here in the audience, so I want to be clear, I am not judging, just telling you what's out there. I'm not blaming or attacking you. Now, it is true that the baby boomers are the wealthiest generation in this country by far. However, the top 10% of the wealthiest boomers hold over 70% of that wealth. So it's not like all the boomers are out there getting really, really wealthy. That's not the way it is. There's still this small group at the top, kind of like with the rest of the population. Also, something to keep in mind is the economic conditions the boomers experienced during most of their working lives were much more conducive to wealth accumulation than what we are experiencing today. Some economic experts have described those conditions, especially the housing market, as uniquely favorable, unlikely to ever be duplicated again. As far as hoarding power, in national political offices, boomers also dominate. Again, no judgment, boomers, but boomers hold about 43% of the seats in Congress. It's a larger percentage in the Senate than in the House. But 5 out of 9 of the U.S. Supreme Court justice positions, including the Chief Justice, are boomers. And of course, the current president is in the oldest group of boomers, turning 80 this year. The previous president is a member of the silent generation, while the other 3 presidents who have held office during the last 30 years have all been boomers. We do not have any constitutional term limits for members of Congress, and the U.S. Supreme Court justices are allowed to keep their positions for the rest of their lives. And although the Constitution prohibits a president from being elected to more than 2 terms, the current president has talked about running for a 3rd term. So whether that happens will remain to be seen. But I think it's pretty easy to see how younger generations might feel shut out of political power, as well as financial power. And now let's talk about some people from a couple of the youngest generations in this country. Some older generations view millennials and Generation Z, which represent the youngest people in today's workforce, as, and again, no judgment, millennials and Gen Z. You notice I left Gen X out, you know. We might be getting it from both sides, I don't know. But some people view millennials and Generation Z as lazy, entitled, self-involved. These generations are often labeled as having no work ethic. But maybe we could take a closer look at the circumstances and mindset of millennials and Generation Z, and we might gain more understanding of their situation. Millennials and Gen Z adults have borne the after effects of the housing crisis and the economic declines associated with the COVID pandemic. And as generations, they tend to have less homeownership and more debt than their elders. And a lot of that's just because of the way the financial waves flowed. Many people in the younger generations do feel discouraged and hopeless about the current economic realities as well as their future prospects. But also, younger generations also have shifted to prioritizing their mental health and insisting on more of a work-life balance. And they're more likely to set boundaries. For instance, being unwilling to work overtime, travel for their jobs, or work in an office setting as opposed to working remotely. Many of these younger generation folks have realized the benefits of virtual platforms, and they choose to prioritize a work arrangement that gives them more time at home. So that's the reality for a lot of those younger people in the workforce. But still, it goes back and forth. These judgments, conflicts, resentments, sometimes unpleasant put-downs. I'm sure that you've probably heard someone say at least once in your life, "Okay, boomer." Maybe you've heard people say, "Those young people today, they just don't want to work. They just want stuff handed to them." I've heard those things and a lot more that I'm not going to share with you because, again, I don't believe in stereotyping or labeling, and I certainly don't want to contribute to putting people down or labeling folks. So, what is the solution to this intergenerational conflict? these resentments, these judgments. They're divisive. They're definitely not constructive, especially when there's so much going on in the larger world that could really benefit from all generations working together, collaborating to improve things. I bet you thought that you might get some solutions directly from me today and some super great wisdom about what each generation thinks and does. But as I mentioned earlier, I don't believe in stereotypes, and I don't think generalizations are helpful, even though I just read some. If we want to really address these challenges that happen between generations, I think that it's important to get away from the labels. Now, I could call myself Gen X. It's kind of fun, kind of have this cultural identity, like, yeah, Gen X. But here's the thing. I read a lot of stuff online about what Gen Xers supposedly did when we were kids, and a lot of it doesn't apply to me. I was not someone who was just all over the place all the time with no supervision. That was not my parents. But a lot of folks in my generation were what you would call latchkey kids that did a lot on their own and didn't have their parents home to supervise them much time. Getting away from the labels and stereotypes is really key to making these changes in how we relate to each other as generations. Because I can promise you, for every person of any generation who fits those stereotypes, there are so many others who do not. So, how about looking at each other as individuals? Lessons that we can learn from each generation. That's another thing. I know I kind of put that out there in the title of this talk, but as someone who believes in research and following where the research leads, rather than just having something in mind and then trying to find research that fits that and affirms it, I realized that it wouldn't be very honest for me to tell you what you could learn from each generation specifically in a way that would apply to everybody in that generation. Because we can learn a lot from each other. I'll tell you some things I've learned from individual members of certain generations. One is, no matter how old you are, it's never too late to start doing something that you really want to do. You can go for it. As long as your circumstances fit what you want to do, as far as financial and health situations, why not? One of my friends is in their 50s. They recently went skydiving for the first time along with someone who was in their 60s. When I was going to Bradley in the 80s, I took a summer class on, it was a criminal justice class. We went to tour facilities for youth detention centers. And one of the people in that class was a woman in her 80s. This was 40 years ago. A woman in her 80s who had multiple degrees from Bradley. And she was attending the classes just because she wanted to learn more. I've learned a lot from kids that I've been around. Like, play is important. I think I've benefited from learning to be more playful. And having said all that, lessons that we can learn from each generation largely depend on how we approach our relationships with each generation and even with the people in our own generation. So I do have some recommendations. And they really boil down to 4 C's. Since I didn't really deliver on the promise of lessons from each generation, maybe thoroughly like you might have expected, I'm going to leave you with a neat little soundbite, 4 C's. First 2, connection and conversation. This involves actually interacting with other generations, people from other generations. How often do you talk to someone who's not in your approximate age group? I'll admit, when I'm meeting new people, I'm not standing there like, okay, now how old were you? What year were you born in? Oh, wait, I can't talk to you. But we might tend to just gravitate to people who are roughly our own age. So I encourage you to interact with people who might be significantly different than you in age, as well as other people that you know are in your own generation. Connect and talk to each other. Having conversations can help so much. There's a lot of programs that I discovered around the country that actually involve intergenerational volunteering, in which youth go into facilities like retirement centers, assisted living facilities, and there are structured programs where those young people interact with the residents and they do projects together. I read about an innovative approach to psychiatry and mental health called the Friendship Bench, which was developed by a psychiatrist in Zimbabwe and has now spread to several other countries, including the United States. This psychiatrist thought of this as a way to address the fact that in Zimbabwe, in a particular part of the country, there were only 10 psychiatrists for millions and millions of people. So he recruited grandmas and trained them to sit on benches and talk to people about their lives. He trained them to basically do talk therapy. It has spread to these other countries, including the US. And it's not just grandmas now, it's other people of older generations. But this doctor has researched it and it's been found to work really well. The third C after connection and conversation is curiosity. We can try to learn from each other and be interested in each other's lives and stories without judgment, just to learn what someone else is about and what they've been through. You may or may not have seen the TV show Ted Lasso, but Ted Lasso, the main character, has a saying, be curious, not judgmental. And I think that really applies to intergenerational relationships as well. The fact is, every generation has strengths and challenges and hardships that they've lived through and gifts that they have, special qualities that they bring to any relationship and to the world. Think about the older generations who've lived through world wars. Think about the people who lived through the Depression. One of those was my late father-in-law. Think of the lessons that they learned from those about sacrifice, frugality, making the most of what little they might have at the time, endurance of long-distance relationships, somehow recovering the best that they could from the trauma that all that inflicted. Each generation has lessons about innovation. We like to talk a lot about modern technology, like smartphones and iPads and newfangled apps and stuff like that. And we might think, oh, it's just those young whippersnappers that invented that stuff. But think of the innovation that brought things like the telephone, that brought things like space travel. Every generation has interesting innovation stories to share. And every generation brings people who are individuals with their own personalities and creative talents. A couple weeks ago, I had the privilege of going to see a performance of Legally Blonde Jr., which a few members of our congregation participated in, a few behind the scenes and one of them actually on stage. And it was magnificent. Young people. These were not young people who don't want to work anymore. These are people who had like 4 hours of rehearsal every day for I don't know how many days leading up to the performances, but hard workers. Every generation has people that work hard. Every generation has people that are like, you know what? I value my peace of mind more than I value making a lot of money, so I'm just going to chill. And I'll do the best I can to get by, but, you know, I'm not out there to hustle for more and more money. So the third one is curiosity. The fourth C, finally, is compassion. Each member of every generation is an individual. And each of us as individuals is a flawed human being. And there might be things that we don't particularly agree with or like about certain people from whatever generation or other people from our own generation, but seek to understand and try to gain some perspective on what their story is, compassion can go a long way with that, toward bridging the intergenerational gaps. Finally, I have a couple practical recommendations that involve this very congregation. Oh, wait, congregation's a C. So I guess that's the fifth C. Volunteer opportunities abound that could allow each of us to interact with people from other generations more frequently and more closely. I'll give you an example. Youth religious education. I volunteered this past church year, and I'm doing it again. I happened to be in the grades 2 to 4 classroom And I tell you what, I learned, I think, more from those young people than I taught them. And I know Jesse Lachlan, our Director of Lifespan Religious Education, is always looking for volunteers in religious ed. And the religious ed year is just about to start up. So if you're interested in that, I encourage you to see Jesse. And fun fact, you don't have to have a child of your own in religious ed to volunteer. I do not, and there are some other folks who don't. Another way that you can connect with people from other generations is to join a committee like, say, our Caring Committee. I'm on that committee, and although I don't officially take a poll like, how old are you for each of the folks, I'm pretty sure I'm one of the very youngest people on that committee, and I'm Gen X. I know there are other generations younger than I am. I just shared about those. Caring Committee, a lot of what the Caring Committee does is outreach things and support of people who are among our older members. So that's one example of a committee. There are others. There are other projects that come along, activities that the church does. Some of our most active members in the church are younger people, and some of them are among our oldest members. So if you volunteer and get involved in this church community, even in one capacity, one project, one committee, you can really connect with people from other generations and get to know more about what makes each individual special and set aside those labels. So next week, I will turn 59, enter my last year of being a, what was it called again, quinquagenarian, and move forward in my life. I have to say, these last several years of being in my 50s have been even better than they would have been otherwise, because I've been privileged to be part of this beloved community. And although I didn't quite give you all the answers about the different generations today, I hope that you might have gotten something to think about from what I've shared. So I appreciate your time. Thank you, and have a wonderful week.